Coming up on today's episode, full self-driving, finally here, question mark, SpaceX fires three Raptor engines for the first time, and NASA takes a bite out of an asteroid. Let's get ludicrous. Hey there, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future stuff happening today that's going to make tomorrow totally ludicrous.
Totally ludicrous. That was the normal. That was a real intro.
See that? So I mess it up purposefully so much so that every once in a while I can do it right, and that's shocking.
Play action, baby. You got to run the ball in order to fake him.
Well, anyway, I'm Joe Scott with the Answer Joy YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Hi, it's me, Tim Dodd, the Everyday Astronaut from Everyday Astronaut YouTube channel. With us, as always, is Ben Solins.
God, what is... You guys have had your coffee this morning.
Starting 2 hours later, it's time for that coffee to really, you know...
And I also have had my coffee.
Oh, geez. Here it is.
a nice, lovely Pike's Place roast from Starbucks.
I'm about to go into Starbucks and just ask for a free coffee for all the free advertising we've done for them.
Just show a video. Be like, see, I'm holding it in the video. See right there. Just, it's $2. Come on. $2. It has to be worth $2.
Don't you know who I am?
Yeah, I want to do that. Don't you know this podcast has 55,000 subscribers?
Oh, man. Well, and if you don't know... Who we are, you don't know that you can also become a Discordian member and listen and watch live, as our folks and friends are doing right now. I see Swifty in there, Captain Deadweight, Karadeath. How y'all doing? Thank you for joining us again.
Another
lovely day in the Ludicrous Futures. Brownie. And if you would like to learn more, sign up, be one of the cool cats and kittens, you can do so at olfpod.com/Patreon. It does help keep the lights on, and we appreciate you all. Plus, you get some cool benefits. So there's that. And of course, if you have the attention span of a, child like me and many others do, you can just get the tapas here. Just the tidbits, just the news, just the juicy, just the steak or the tofu, whichever you prefer, at olfpod.com/highlights. It's another YouTube channel where we just post the individual segments instead of the hours upon hours of ranting about how much we love Starbucks Pike's Place roast in between.
No.
It's just, you know. There's nothing else that I want in life more than to enjoy.
Okay, so
I want to have a pool and swim.
Speaking of, ready for this one? Taking a bite and just a little tapas.
Oh,
you guys know where I'm going with this. NASA took a little tiny bite, just a little tiny sample of an asteroid. Asteroid Bennu. It happened, my friends. This is big news. This is the first time the United States has done it. And if this mission continues to go successfully, we'll learn more. I think as the recording of today, I think I'll learn more about how much they actually gathered from the asteroid. They'll be able to get accurate readings on how much the thing did. But here's a video from NASA for those
of
you.
Did they find coffee on there?
Planet
I don't know
Starbucks.
If there's any coffee. This, by the way, I should mention that we've retrieved very trace amounts, not we, but JAXA. Well, we, humanity, has retrieved very trace amounts of an asteroid with Hayabusa 1 about
Hayabusa,
10 years ago.
I couldn't remember the name of that. Thank you. Sorry.
How'd they get this angle?
The other one was CGI. This part is not
CGI. First they dropped
CGI.
A camera on the asteroid.
They threw a GoPro at it.
James Cameron was up there with his submersible.
Whoa.
That'd actually be awesome if they would just put a GoPro down like first and just filmed it. Maybe next time, NASA. No, but this is really, really exciting. This was the OSIRIS-REx mission, Asteroid Bennu. And what it does is it's basically this little, just this tiny, you know, little mosquito-like thing. And it goes
it
down
is a
and
mosquito.
It's a and by the way, it's heater. Been at Bennu. Let me think. When was that? 2017 that it got there? 2018?
It's been there a while. I remember doing a video about it a long time ago on my channel.
That's right. It arrived at Bennu at the very end of 2018, December 31st, 2018. I remember it snuck into my an Astro Award that I did because it just barely made it in the year of 2018. But this is this is great news because first off, like it sat there and it mapped. That's why we have this beautiful image of the asteroid at the beginning of this video that I'm showing, because it has orbited for almost 2 years now and mapped out the asteroid with extreme detail, high resolution, extreme detail. and they're able to model it and find the best place to land. Because the hardest thing about an asteroid is that its gravity is so low. You have to like take into account its gravity, but you know, dust flies everywhere. Like if you mess with it and stuff, it's just like this debris field. So going down and kissing it with this mosquito, basically it has like this mosquito nose, as this that one little thing shows. And it kind of went down and it just sucked up a little bit of a regolith, a little bit of dirt.
Yeah, but look at how much it just flies around.
Yeah.
How much it scatters when they touch it. Do you happen to know, is it like a vacuum tube? Or is it like a drill on the end that kind of like messes it all up?
Yeah, I'll show you what it is. And I should mention that that video was one shot every 1.25 seconds, I think. So the amount of time it actually spent, I think 5 or 6 seconds on the surface. So this video makes it look like it just goes down and goes, and then just explodes and comes out. It was there for like 6 full seconds or something. So that video is very poor representation. But this is what the nose, the sucker thing looks like. It's actually a blower.
The proboscis.
What?
Thank you.
Excuse me.
SAT words.
But this is called the TAGSAM, which is the, what's the backronym for
that? So Bennu is it now? It tagged Bennu and it's it now?
Yes.
And it has to chase another asteroid and make it.
Thank you, Joe.
I'm 12.
Yeah, it tagged Bennu. But the way, I'm trying to figure out what TAGSAM stands for. I saw it somewhere earlier. I don't know, whatever. The thing
touch
that,
and go, simple, scroll up. There it was.
What?
A little bit more. Scroll up. Right. Touch and go, simple acquisition mechanism.
Sample acquisition mechanism.
Thank you.
I'm here for you, buddy.
Touch and go, sample acquisition mechanism, TAGSAM. And what it is, it actually is a blower. So they just shoot nitrogen out of the... So imagine a Roomba, if you will, those of you listening. A Roomba. And in the very middle of it, it's about the same size as the room. It's 1 foot
wide.
It
looks like a carburetor air filter or something like that. You know, like an old school.
Yes. And it is basically that. So what it does is it laid it down onto the asteroid, basically. Pushed it in, you know, a little bit. And then shot nitrogen, just, you know, inert gas. Nitrogen from like a compressed bottle. Shot it through the center. It disrupted dust and shoots it everywhere, or tries to shoot it everywhere. And it ends up getting collected basically in that filter. So here's a nice little video. From NASA. If you guys, it'll be in the show notes, but if you want to see this video, it's under, if you type in OSIRIS-REx touch and go, they have this, NASA has this really good animation showing how this thing works. And it's awesome. The reason this is all exciting is not just because they're collecting the sample, but this sample will get shot back to Earth. So we will actually retrieve, humans will touch, probably with gloves, but, you know, will touch and actually get their hands on these samples from an asteroid. And that's why this is so important. You know, it's not just like, you know, Curiosity rover, awesome. You know, all these other rovers that we've sent to, you know, Mars and stuff like that. We're actually working on that with Perseverance, but all of those samples just stay. Yeah, look at this. They loaded up into this little tiny thing. Do you see that? It was a little aero shell.
Mm-hmm. Like that. Yeah, and that capsule is what's going to re-enter the atmosphere, I assume. Yeah.
Yep. With some parachutes.
So does this whole... It's not a satellite. Does the whole spacecraft here return and then it just shoots that into the atmosphere? Or does it shoot it off from where it's at now?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it actually, if I remember right, does someone in Discord know? If I remember right, I think it basically flies back. It what?
That would be a ton of Delta V to get back to Earth from there.
Yeah, but it also has really efficient propulsion.
It'd be like a Dude Perfect video or something, you know?
Because like.
Ion?
I think, yeah, if I remember right, it's ion propulsion. But I, you know, all the guidance navigation is on this unit, the main OSIRIS-REx unit. So if I remember, I think it does basically fly back to Earth, get really close, and then it injects the thing into the atmosphere.
And it's probably going to swing around some planets and do some orbital stuff along the way.
Yep, take
some
pictures. Here we can read sample return on December September 24th, 2023, the OSIRIS-REx return capsule will re-enter Earth's atmosphere and land in a parachute, but it doesn't say whether or not... Man, I don't remember. I don't think I've ever actually read how it actually returns back. But yeah, super, super cool. Huge, huge congratulations to NASA for this. Again, so I mentioned Hayabusa. Hayabusa, I didn't realize when I read up on it that Hayabusa hadn't really retrieved the sample properly. They got very small trace bits of the asteroid, but they did not collect like a large sample size like they were hoping. So although this isn't necessarily a first, you know, and as a matter of fact, Hayabusa 2, which landed on an asteroid, Ryugu, was that the one? Just only a couple years ago, 2-3 years ago, yeah. That is actually on its way back right now. And they'll be retrieving the sample. So this definitely isn't like a first to retrieve, you know, asteroid samples. That doesn't mean it's not still something we need to celebrate. It's obviously the first time we've returned something from asteroid Bennu. So that's just really exciting. And yeah, Hayabusa 2 is due back in December already. So yeah.
Oh, this year?
Of this year, yeah.
Like in a couple months. Okay, and so really cool. Will that be the first asteroid sample from space that we have our hands on and collected?
Like the first real proper collection of it, since Hayabusa 1 technically had bits of an asteroid, but not, we're talking like a few particles of dust, basically. You know, like
So what was the satellite, what was the probe mission, whatever, that got behind a comet? And like basically opened up a little gel thing and just took samples of comet dust.
Oh geez,
I forget what that was, but they have done that
right now. Yeah, that was the first comet retrieval, wasn't it?
The touch and go comet sample retriever, CamSam.
That one just kind of collected its farts.
Yeah, I think that's
some water bears, some tardigrades.
I am blanking on that one.
Rosetta?
No. No, Rosetta. Oh.
Where was it?
Wait. Gosh, it feels like it was 10 years ago and I have no idea. I think was it Rosetta and the little Philae lander? Remember that little lander?
Yeah, you're right. That was, God, there's actually so many that's kind of hard to keep track now.
That's exciting though.
What are we hoping to learn from these samples?
Well, asteroids and comets and stuff like that, they're very, you know, they're relatively untouched. You know, they don't have life like us, like teeming and messing things up. They're very stable. You know, they don't have volcanic activity. So when you sample something like this, you're sampling bits of the early universe, basically, you know, bits of stuff that could have been events from billions of years ago. And you just gain more data. You know, that's what... all of these sample type of stuff, you know, we just have new benchmarks, new things to be able to compare our models of radioactive decay or, you know, whatever against other models, you know, just kind of plug in more data points to our understanding of things. Stardust mission. I forgot about that too.
Yeah. I was just looking at the Planetary Society's website.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't, you know, it's one of those things I don't really know directly, like what benefit this has to humanity as a whole. Immediately, but some of those things we don't really realize the fruits of that labor until, you know, it gets in the hands of scientists and they all get to sit and parse through all the data, parse through all the chemistry, parse through all the geology, you know, and actually, you know, plug it in and do some work,
figure out what's going on.
Yeah,
well, and it's exciting because this is the unfiltered, unadulterated stuff that made up the solar system going back billions of years, you know, and
you're kind of looking back in time.
Yeah. And I love the the footage where, you know, they have the touch and go and the stuff scattered everywhere because the gravity is so low and whatnot. It kind of kills me. Like these asteroids, they're just a very loose collection of dust and rocks. Yeah. Like they are just barely held together.
Yeah. Yeah. You even notice that it actually depresses into the asteroid, the nose does, just by gently coming down very slowly. That probe, the nose, is actually sinking into it because it's so loosely bound together. You know, there's just not that strong of a gravitational field. There's not enough mass there, so it's just, like you said, loosely bound, like rocks and dirt.
Now that is one type of asteroid. There are others that are more solid, that are more rocky and like iron based and stuff,
and like diamond ones and stuff.
Yeah, because that's part of the promise, right? Is to, or not the promise, but one dream is for construction in space, we would rather kind of lasso an asteroid with, you know, I don't know how many tons of metal on it to make stuff with rather than try to launch it from here.
Yes. Yep.
And yep. then that
and,
would be...
And fuel, because some of them have, you know, ice water. Some
methane,
are literally
like
made
that.
Out of like platinum. You know, like there is what would be a really rare earth, you know, rare earth material or metal could be, we could completely have 100,000 times the amount that we've ever seen on a single piece of rock in the sky, basically, or whatever, you know?
Well, if yeah. I'm not mistaken, when the earth was formed, some of the heaviest metal sank to the core, to the middle. Mm. So, stuff that is kind of rare on the surface here is not so rare in space because there wasn't, you know, it's not being stuffed down into the core of something.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So you, it's actually, it's not easier to get because you have to actually hunt down an asteroid, but it's, you know, it's just out there.
Yeah.
It's yeah. probably easier to get than going to the core of the earth. Let's put it that way.
Or maybe it's even easier than like, teaching a car how to drive itself or something.
Oh, we're going there. Look at that.
Yeah, that's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, did you guys see, actually, the Tesla launched the beta preview of the full self-driving capabilities last night? Was it last night?
Oh, I was refreshing Twitter like crazy as people were starting to get their hands on full self-driving. I'm waiting.
Such betas.
Come on.
Yeah. Well,
give me that.
You know, we Joe and I called Tesla and let them know about your driving history, so just don't hold your breath.
Which I...
why don't you pull that up for us?
Actually, they were like, well, that'd be a really good test.
Yeah, I kind of thought that was funny when Elon tweeted that about, oh, expert and careful drivers. I'm like, but why? Why wouldn't you? If it's full self, wouldn't you not need that? I don't know. And so I think did we speculate about this before? I think I was saying I was going to be shocked if it could make left turns. And
yes.
apparently it can.
Oh yeah, it's doing left turns, it's doing right turns, it's doing all the turns, my friends.
Yeah, so there's lots of stuff
to
happening.
Everything.
Some going through yeah. roundabouts, navigating in neighborhoods where there are cars and no lane markings.
The
I think this guy,
think
he had to
disengage.
Take control over it
yeah.
right there.
He wasn't too stoked about it, but on that, but everything else, people are freaking out.
Yeah.
Over this.
Well, it's really curious. I'm looking forward to after today because, you know, it's daylight now and you can actually film and see what's happening.
Yeah.
Because all of this was shot like on a cell phone at night, but all the stuff out there pretty much.
So this launched literally last night.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry, now, Wednesday night for those of you listening. Yeah.
And it's funny because what we're seeing here on the screen and what you'll see on Twitter, probably seen a lot of it already, is the visualization being very different. And Green on Twitter, the guy that kind of does this hacking stuff or whatever breaks down into this stuff, he said that this was released in 2018, these visualizations.
Wow.
So that's actually like what you're seeing in the visualization is what the car has been seeing for years now. And they're just now finally choosing to show it to us. But I guess I'm like less impressed with that. I'm more impressed with what it's actually doing.
Right.
Which
the visualizations are very crude, but... That's not what matters. That's not what you care about.
Right. Right. And the computer probably sees far more than what you're seeing on the screen there.
Yeah.
You know, they're just trying to make it more interesting for you to look at, I guess. So
we just saw a left-hand turn.
Yeah. So it's literally
a four-way stop.
Stopping and turning.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still really curious what the next step is. I mean, like, first off, what do you guys think? Just reactions of... what it can do or what we've seen.
It's so rough what we just saw. A cell phone camera at night. You know. I'm sure over the next week we're going to be seeing a lot of really cool stuff.
With an Atari looking like little interface, you know.
Well, and I mean, I don't know. It's one thing to see it on the screen and it's another thing to actually see the car. Like, I don't know. If they had the camera back here and you could see the screen and the car making the turns and stuff, I feel like that would be more interesting to look at. But
it was kind of tongue in cheek.
The fact that it stopped and took a left turn was impressive, actually.
It was kind of tongue in cheek, but I was like, yeah, it'd be really cool if Tesla, you know, gave this to someone that knows how to operate a camera. You know, we could actually see what's happening. But it was also nighttime, so I give them that. But yeah, hopefully we'll see some really good. Because that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, awesome, yes, but I want to see like a legit. I kind of want to see them do it. You know what I mean? Like they actually hire film crews to like do these. Like I want to see. Mm-hmm. I just want.
There's a guy on YouTube that's always done. I forget who it is. That's just done a simple like over the shoulder shot.
Yeah,
you know, and
love
and
it.
And the binnacle shot, and literally just gone on this route, you know, 20 miles or whatever, and just filmed it for like years now. I would love to see, you know, a shot just like that, and hopefully that is coming soon.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You know, where you just watch what it does, what it can and can't do. I'm genuinely like, from what I've seen, I've watched a handful of these last night. I was just sitting there refreshing, waiting for new ones to come in. It really seems more impressive than I thought. I thought it was going to be a lot less actually capable of self-driving, and I thought it was gonna be like physically slow. Elon made it seem like it's slow and cautious, but it's keeping up with track. Like, it's not like it's going physically slow. It might make decisions slower than, you know, and do things at a more conservative pace than I think we might drive ourselves for now. But it looks to me, I mean, like from the videos I've watched, people, it just looks like someone's driving, you know. It looks like a pretty normal driver, and it's doing pretty complex things, changing lanes. And the big, I saw a big stoplight where there's, you know, two left turn lanes and two or three like straight lanes or whatever. And it did all that fine. I was just like, what? It's feature complete, it seems like, but it definitely, you know, people need to be extremely vigilant, because I think that's the thing, is right now it might be 95% capable, but that 5% where it's not capable is like, if you're not paying attention, it will just drive straight into a mailbox, you know, or it could drive straight into this pedestrian, you know, or whatever. So you're going to have to be extremely vigilant. And then, but the good thing is, now that so many people will be operating it, think about how much more data they're going to be getting.
Well, that's the question, is when is it going to be rolled out to more people, right? Is this just a little beta preview for a dozen people, or, and then they're going to take it back? Or is this a, now it's there, like these people are going to have it forevermore until they have like a, you know, a more polished version or something?
I mean, are they collecting data from this? Isn't this part of the data collection process?
Yeah.
It seems like they would leave it out there then.
Assuming there's not some massive horrendous flaw that is targeting people with like a, if it sees a bicycle, intentionally runs it over. Like, assuming there's not any like nasty flaw like that, you know, I think I would assume it's going to stay out there.
It sees like a Hummer and it's just like, oh, you know, straight at it. Yeah.
Speaking of, do
we want to go there already?
Oh.
Was that one of the things we're going to talk about?
It is one of the things we're going to talk about.
I thought you were queuing yourself up there.
Well, I really quick just wanted to say a few more things that, like, I think, you know, I said I'd be surprised if it is able to back out of a driveway. Like, I still haven't quite seen, I want to see someone just getting in the car, typing in their destination, and see exactly what happens from point to point. Someone did say they went supercharger to supercharger.
Like, without into driving. The parking lot and in the parking spot?
Supposedly. They just said it on Twitter. I think it was the Silicon Valley Tesla group,
Tesla
or whatever,
Club.
You know?
Yeah.
I think they tweeted, I just went from supercharger to supercharger without driving.
Nice.
That is, I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means pulling into
stalls.
It's
just like from one spot to the other spot. Just like backed out and pulled into the one
they
next
They just do summon from one spot to another spot. No, if that's the case, that would exceed my expectations by a lot.
Guaranteed, if they gave this to Joe, it would just drive straight over a curb and hit the supercharger.
I was just about to say, even if mine tried to do just the one stop over, it would probably find a curb. It would drive halfway across the parking lot to find a curb and hit it and then come back.
Yeah, and then run over the stall itself. Oh, yeah. By the way, there's this one stall in Nebraska when I was coming home a couple weeks ago or whatever, and there was the sign that says, like, you know, Tesla supercharging only. And it was in between all the supercharger like station things. Every single pole was at about a 15 degree angle backwards because apparently they had it like too far forward, and everyone just backed straight into it, and it's just over time pushed it back. It's just so, I should have taken a picture. Oh, it's funny. But yeah, okay. Sorry, that's all I wanted to say about full self-driving, and I hope I get it ASAP. Elon, get it to me. Speaking of Hummer. Sorry, went backwards.
Speaking of Hummers, the new Hummer GMC, which, okay, so General Motors and GMC is a brand owned by them, bought back the Hummer brand a few years ago, and it is now an electric car, truck thing. And they unveiled it. They're taking reservations. Apparently, they sold out of the first edition. And I don't know. Do you want to talk about specs? If you go to reserve now, I did a whole video on it.
Why are they in space?
I really like the look of it. I think they did. It's cool. I think the price and the specs are terrible, and they should just bail on the whole project. Like, the whole thing should.
I can't believe you think that.
Well, to me, they're anti-selling an EV here. They're doing the opposite of trying to.
I don't get what you're talking
accelerate
about.
That.
This is cheaper and as fast as and better range than a freaking Porsche Taycan.
Hmm.
And Hummers have always
very
been
different vehicles. Very
but
different vehicles.
You're saying that it's underselling an EV. This is a freaking super truck that has over 350-mile range. Fantastic. 1,000 horsepower, 0 to 60 under 3 seconds, competing right with anything else. A Hummer is always going to be one of the most expensive, like, high-end, big, show-off-ity vehicle. That 350-mile range is probably further than the normal gasoline one. Or diesel one, even. Like, I don't know how this is underselling. True. I don't get why you're disappointed in this thing. I think it's fantastic.
Well, because there's already a competitor in this space that it's just an absolute, like, night and day difference. The Cybertruck is going to destroy this thing in every single way possible, other than it's not named Hummer. That's the only thing it has going for it, is that you have all the guys that woke up from a coma from the 90s with their bleach-tipped hair and puka shell necklaces looking to go to the club. That's what you get here. You know, you get the Hummer guys. It's just so dumb. The whole thing is a joke. It just should be canceled, really.
Did you say that they sold out of their reservations or their
they
first...
They sold many tens of reservations and sold out, yes. I don't know how many that
actually sold.
But
for real, though, I mean, how many do you think that actually was?
1,000, maybe?
Really?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think they... what the world needs... Okay, I'm all for competition and compelling products. To me, other than the oddity that is it's a Hummer, this is a completely lackluster product. And the reason I say that is because of the Cybertruck. I mean, you look at the Cybertruck, the most expensive one with over 500 miles that's faster than this, that can do all the things that this can, except take the roof off or whatever, is cheaper, 10 grand cheaper than the cheapest one they're doing, which won't be out for 4 years.
Right.
I'm looking at it like...
Time,
but
yeah.
But that's not GM's fault. GM is making a compelling vehicle. It's just that Tesla's absolutely... killing everyone else. Like, that's not GM's fault.
That's my point. You know what? And I say the same thing about Mercedes when they came out with their EQ and it had, like, I don't know, 180 miles of range. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, you guys sat in a meeting and were like, yeah, that sounds good. You really sat there and were like, cool. No, that's terrible. You know,
but this is
the Rivian looks to me is still my winner in this category.
You
but it's a different class, I would say.
You ordered it's a different class, but Cybertruck.
Well,
is it,
it's
like,
not meant to be absurd and obnoxious. You know,
but
it's
but
meant
the Hummer
to,
was always supposed to be absurd and obnoxious.
No, that's why I'm saying
it's
a separate class. That's why I'm saying the Hummer and the Rivian are in different worlds. Like,
sure,
the Rivian wants to actually appeal to people. The Hummer just wants to appeal to people that want Hummers.
Well,
I guess.
But that's an audience, and so I mean that's
fair
my
enough.
Big question is, like, who exactly is this for? Is it just for the people who wanted Hummers before? Why would they care so much about wanting an electric version of a Hummer versus what they
see?
I think
that's it. They probably don't care that it's electric, except what it can do because it's electric, right? 0 to 60 and those kind of things.
Yeah. Ben, how much is the top of the line R1T Rivian?
We don't know. It starts at 69,000. We don't know the actual top of the line price. I'm guessing 89,000.
89, maybe 100,000.
I doubt it. I doubt they would go 100,000.
You don't think if they double the battery pack from 105 almost to 180, you don't think that'll add
what
a good...
What do you mean 105 to 180?
105 kilowatt hours to 180 kilowatt hours. You'd think
for
that
what?
Would...
The
for
Rivian?
R1T, yeah.
You'd do
think
we know that,
would...
that those are the specs?
That's what people are, I mean, 105 is the standard, and people are pretty much speculating, I think, 180, isn't it?
I haven't seen anything.
Well, Anyway, I think you're being a poo-poo about it, and I think
I definitely am. I think GM made a huge mistake.
No, guys, let's keep this civil, okay?
I just don't think it's a mistake. But I think this is a step in the right direction.
If it opens up more people's eyes to electric cars, then great. I don't know what this thing will even be. I was surprised by the Moonlander reference, which I guess I learned they had something to do with. I'm not quite sure what, but
GM, GM was the, or was it Chevy or GM? But yeah, they designed and built the lunar rover for mm-hmm. Apollo 15, 16, and 17.
So they were the first ones to have an electric vehicle in space.
It's true.
Gotcha.
They did make an electric vehicle once before.
Yeah. Yeah. But real quick, back to the point of like, what's this for? This makes, how much was a normal Hummer like this? The big baddest Hummer you could buy when it was gasoline.
Yeah, yeah, it was expensive.
100, uh-huh. Right?
I don't remember, but.
This will just spank the pants off of it in every regard.
I actually really like the product. I hate the price. And
well,
I hate
Hummer,
the four-year timeline. Like 4 years from now, you have one of these coming out for $90,000 that gets 250 miles of range. That is a joke. That is just not real. You know what I mean? They're never going to make that.
You hate the Hummer. I don't care that it will underperform, because that's still going to be, for what a Hummer is and what a Hummer's purpose is, it's not a cross-country road tripping car. It gets 350 kilowatt charging, so it could be. I don't know. I just don't think it's a wrong. I don't think it's a step in the wrong direction. I think it's a step in the right direction. Joe, what about
Fair enough.
I've been yelling at Ben for his opinion too long. Joe, what's your opinion on Ben's opinion?
Or it's on crap.
That's what we've come down to here.
No, I am always in favor of a new EV and bringing new audiences to the joy of electric driving. I will tell you that there's a friend of mine who can't stand Tesla. He's just one of those guys, but he posted on Facebook that he was interested in this, or he said he really loved this. So, you know, if that's what it takes, there's a few things that I'm curious about what's going to happen in the next 5 years. I mean, 2024, is that when this is supposed to come out?
2021 for this one, fall of 2021, they say,
okay.
But 2024 is the base model.
Yeah, that's way too long. Yeah.
It's not going to happen. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, oh, we couldn't sell enough of them. Let's just cancel the whole program.
I am super curious about what Cybertruck is going to do in terms of how it changes people's perceptions of what a truck can be. What is a truck? You know?
Yeah.
It's just such a polarizing design. There's some people that I'm probably probably see it now and just like I wouldn't be caught dead driving something like that. But I really wonder, once they get on the road, I'm with you, but I really wonder, like, once they get on the road and people start seeing them everywhere, I just wonder if public perception. I mean, that happens, like, really crazy stuff.
I mean, the Hummer itself was ridiculous. You're like,
what is going on?
Yeah.
And then eventually it was like, oh, it's one of those.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much public perception is going to change once the Cybertruck comes out, how much that kind of moves the needle for what a truck has to be able to do. But also, I read somewhere about some of the, nobody's ever done a truck of this size. That's like the exoskeleton stainless steel thing. There's probably a lot of roadblocks that we're not quite aware of when it comes to actually creating the Cybertruck in mass. Mm-hmm. So I have my reservations about how soon that's going to come out. So it's all about, like, how soon is the Cybertruck going to come out? How much is the public perception on that kind of thing going to shift so that when something like this comes out, everybody's either going to be like, oh, this is great because it's still kind of a new thing, or, dude, all that's already covered in the Cybertruck, and everybody kind of has shifted to this crazy moonscape kind of
machine. That's a good point.
Yeah.
There's a lot of question marks. I don't know. So we'll see.
Well, you brought up a feeling, because we're coming up on a year ago almost, when 11 months ago or so, when Cybertruck came out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were all together. And I remember that was one of the most divided opinion things in the world. That started, that's the reason 2020 became so polarized, is because Cybertruck came out.
That's
it. All started there.
It also, it was
nothing
like,
else
that was
going on that could have done
was,
anything.
The Spectrum was just pure, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. I want it now. And this is the worst thing that's ever been created. Please just destroy it. You know, those were the two opinions.
Melt it down and let's start over.
And start over. Yeah.
I really look, I'm sorry, and I forget the name of the gentleman who works at Tesla that got me into that event. I'm really appreciative, but I've forgotten your name. I'm so sorry if you're listening. But
Albert,
he was standing
maybe?
Right next. What's that?
Albert?
Maybe.
I forget. Yeah.
I'm terrible with. I forget my wife's name. but he was standing right next to me, and the thing came out, and I remember being like, "Is that it?
Is that really?" Is
like
that...
I was waiting for the facade to fall off and the real thing to be revealed or something. Like I was waiting for, you know, a nice little trolling gag or something. And then it was just kind of like, that's, oh.
People are getting out of it.
They're, yeah.
That's well, not just a cover.
The wind kind of got sucked out of the, or the air kind of got sucked out of the room, if you remember. It was very much like it came out. Everyone was like, like, what was it? Yeah. It wasn't like a, oh my God, yeah. It was more of a confused...
Well, the air definitely got sucked out of the room once the glass broke.
That
literally was the most awkward thing I think I've ever, like, I've never experienced a thing like that where you're like, everyone's just like, what now?
Yeah, yeah.
What are we, supposed to leave? Like, with, like,
yeah. Maybe he'll break another window. But no, I remember being in a car. I think both of you guys were in there, but there were other people too. And we were, like, everyone in the car was like, what was that?
Yeah.
Like, this is the nuttiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
But we're kind of used to it now. So I'm really thinking, like, once it gets on the road and the general public gets used to it.
The look definitely has grown on me, but I still think it's not something I would feel comfortable owning or driving.
Yeah.
It is, from the first day of seeing it to now, has changed completely. You know, there's still angles I hate straight from the side. Ugh. But, like, seeing it from the front or the back, like, kind of at that, like, you know, quarter panel look. I love it. It's totally grown on me and it's really cool, but straight on from the side just still looks too much like
there
polygonal.
There was that one,
you know,
where they cut the top off just a little bit.
Yeah.
Remember, it was like they added one more bend or whatever. Yeah. That to me, it was like, oh, perfect. Now it looks, yeah. I like that.
They made it a little bit more sleek, I think, over since that original one.
And Elon said recently, I think on the earnings call, that they were making updates and improvements to it. But I think ultimately that's why I think the Hummer is just a flop or just like destined to fail, is because if you have the Cybertruck, okay, if there's Hummer sitting there and a Cybertruck pulls up next to it, which one is going to be more eye-catching? Which one is going to be more like, holy crap, look at that thing? I have to imagine that's a Cybertruck. Like, objectively, it looks so strange and bizarre.
Yeah.
Even if you love it, you have to admit that it looks crazy.
Oh, of course.
Right?
It looks, does not look like it belongs on the road. Like, it looks like it's in a video game.
A Hummer being there is just going to be like, oh yeah, that's another one of those things, right? Mm-hmm. It looks a little different, but it basically looks like a Hummer, like always has. So I guess to me, that's where I'm looking at it going, if you want that shock and awe, then the Cybertruck is your winner. And by the way, it is so much cheaper, like so much cheaper and better.
Well, like, yeah, someone in our Discord who said that, they go, Mystic Wolf says half a Cybertruck at twice the cost.
There you go. 100%. That to me is why I look at it as a big swing and a miss. Now, they've sold out the however many they have. We don't know, but the Ford electric F-150 also comes to mind here, with the obvious difference that the Ford electric F-150 is like more of a mainstream kind of truck. And the beauty of this whole thing is with Ford, they don't have to sell a single Tesla fan their truck. They have so many, such huge, long heritage. Even Chevy wouldn't have to. If Chevy came out with an electric Silverado, then
Silverado.
Then they wouldn't have to sell a single electric car fan at all. And still, they could have a huge success on their hands. With Hummer, I guess that's the question. That's what it boils down to. How many people out there really love and miss their Hummer from the 90s or whenever it was, early 2000s, that want one now? And this is like their you know, they've been waiting for this. That's the question. Because they don't, it's not like Chevy or Ford that have this long heritage and giant built-in
Loyal audience that will just buy the next one, period.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Identity. Right. Do they? Maybe they do. Maybe I'm wrong.
It's not a huge, you know, 10 million people thing. It's like a, it might be like a 5,000 loyal Hummer enthusiasts that are like, I can't wait. But I think you're right. The shock and awe value is kind of gone. You know, like Tesla did the shock and awe. This is extremely conservative as far as appearance goes. Pretty ho-hum these days. Yeah, it's big and it's fast. But it's definitely not, if you're looking to you know, have peacock feathers or whatever, you know, like it's, I think it's not quite the one anymore. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like if you saw this Hummer EV next to, you know, a Nissan Sentra,
I wonder how many people though are going to see it and not know it's electric and not think it's anything different than a, you know, Hummer from whatever.
Or just a new Hummer period. I mean, isn't that kind of a good thing though? Isn't that kind of what we want?
In general, I think that is, but again, it's just maybe it's my perception of Hummer. The idea has always been, let me stand out, and this doesn't stand out to me.
Well, it will once it absolutely destroys like a Nissan GTR even at a stoplight, you know, like that'll turn some heads and stand out, you know.
Could you imagine this thing on a drag strip? That's going to be the funniest looking thing ever. It's like a freaking monster truck. You got like next to a Bigfoot.
0 to 60 in 3 seconds is no joke for a vehicle this size. Like 3 seconds is insanely fast. But nowadays with EVs, it's becoming almost this like, if it doesn't reach 3 seconds anymore, we're almost just like, oh, that's not that quick.
Yeah,
so many of them are.
What is the Mustang Mach-E? I feel like that was something like 4-point-something seconds, and it's like, that's incredibly quick for a Mustang, but not really competitive in the EV space. You know,
it's like a basic, like the slowest Tesla you can buy, basically.
Yeah, this is like standard range, cheapest model you can get.
Yeah,
got it. you know, and this is your fast Mustang. You're like, You know, that's why when those guys kept saying that at the event, you know, it's got to go. It's got to go like hell, or whatever their phrase was for the Mustang. I'm like, guys, I agree with you, but that ain't it. That ain't it.
Sure, it's fast compared to your gas cars, but this is slow in our world, my friends.
Yeah.
Wait, didn't they have a Mustang EV that like broke some record or did really well on a track somewhere or something?
There's different things they've done that are like prototype cars.
Right.
There's one, the Shelby Cobra Jet 1400 blah 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 something or other EV, there's like 15 names of it, which is like a drag racing car, and that thing, I don't know, is stupid. It's amazing. It's just a feat of engineering though. It's Ford racing division. No, it's not even close. So and then they did have an electric actual Mustang that someone else made at SEMA that was going to be like 900 horsepower beast, but again, that was like a SEMA car, that wasn't a real car. I still think we're going to see an actual Ford Mustang, like the two-door coupe style, not the you know, not the family wagon that we've got now, but
we'll have to see. You know, will GMC's stock go through the roof, you know, if by the time they get to their quarterly after this thing drops, you know, will it increase the
Well, Tesla's speaking stock of Starship, certainly.
Oh wait, you're cheating something else. Sorry, I misread your.
That's
cheater.
A good looking nose cone on the Hummer. Speaking of nose cones, So Tesla did earnings. They blew everyone's socks off. Is that the thing? Can you imagine? See, I don't understand that reference. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay, revenue $8.7 billion for the third quarter, beating Wall Street's expectation. 39% year-over-year growth, pretty amazing. Non-GAAP earnings per share of 76 cents compared to the estimate of 57 cents. So that was huge. What is the stock at now?
It didn't jump too much. 7 points today, which is only like 1%, 1.72%.
Yeah, what did it open at though? Didn't it jump from yesterday to today?
Like 20. It went up like 3 or 4%.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's funny that we don't consider that a lot,
right?
But because in most stocks that would be a huge percent, or that'd be a big jump usually. Record deliveries, profitability, cash flow. They just absolutely crushed it again. Obviously, this is a big helped immensely by the Chinese factory that's online and growing. Apparently, they're going to be raising money again to help fund some of these other expansion plans. You know, they're building out the factory in Texas already. The Gigafactory in Berlin is coming along. So lots of growth, lots of stuff. Again, Tesla's still just crushing it, and likely, I think they said that 500,000 cars delivered this year is still on the table. So that'd be a record for them. It'd be pretty cool, wow. You know, to see them to be able to do that. Because as an electric car maker that sells a niche product, that's really insane, I guess I would say. And the fact that they're the world's most valuable automaker still is just mind blowing. but the way I like to think of that is that Tesla is a tech company that happens to make cars versus a car company that is trying to make things tech.
Yeah.
You know, GM, Ford entered the chat kind of a thing. So, yeah, great earnings call. I didn't see any major bombastic stuff in the talking points or the Q&A section. That's probably because I was completely buried with Full Self-Driving stuff. So it was one of those things where it was like the past few days have just been like, you know, news upon news upon news upon news. So, but yeah, things are looking good, healthy wise. They're not going bankrupt. Anyone worried about that? That's generally the only question I think people care about with their earnings, unless you're an investor, you know.
I still remember I had so many people when I told them that I had ordered a Model 3, you know, 3 years ago now or whenever it was, at least 3 years ago. It was like early 20s or whenever it came out. You know, I pre-ordered one right away, and I had some people being like, I can't believe you're doing that. You know, by the time you get the car, like, you first you won't get your car, and then other thought was it won't be a company, you know, 5 months after you have the car. Mm-hmm. And there was a scare there for a little bit trying to get the car online and mass produce, but like, boy, were they wrong. Those people were
never bet against
wrong.
Elon Musk.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Elon just, you know, I'm still a person that's very skeptical of like true level 5 autonomy for, you know, within the next decade. But I don't doubt that when Elon says these things are going to happen, they are. Just when he says it'll happen next week, it's like, yeah. You know. Yeah.
Well, same with like, I know we're not going to hop into Starship News, but same thing with that type of stuff. When he says full reusable orbital class, you know, vehicle, rapidly reusable, fly, you know, 100 times in a week or whatever, no big deal. Like, that is within the realm of physical possibilities, and it should be the case, you know, at some point. But he sometimes sells it as something that's going to be available like immediately. Like once Starship's online, we can just boop. It's like you're going to be iterating on that thing for probably 5 to 10 years before you get anywhere near that promise. But it's still the promises that, you know, the vision is there. You know, but drudging through the mud to get there sometimes, I think he just kind of overlooks a little bit, you know. But
for
it's
sure.
Understandable.
That intraplanetary travel thing is, you know, a couple decades away probably, right?
Yeah. Or, yeah. But, yeah, I think that's, I mean, what do they have? This has 14.5 billion cash equivalent now for Tesla.
They had 8.5 billion in the bank. What were you looking at there? I didn't see that metric.
Tesla currently has 5.9 billion increase in our cash and cash equivalents in Q3 to 14.5 billion.
Wow, that's a lot. And ironically, they still need to raise more.
Yeah.
But see, I think that when it comes to raising money, they've just continued to deliver again and again. So it shouldn't be a problem at all, right? I mean, when you look at their expansion plans and literally, like that's, I didn't pay attention to the GM stock, but you look at what they're doing and you're like, wow, in 4 years, you'll have something with 250 miles of range for 90 grand. Really? Like, that's not looking good. but then again, GM is not somebody that really has committed to electric. It doesn't seem they've kind of done this, this greenwashing kind of thing. But I don't know if they've really committed to it, especially considering they're, you know, siding with Trump trying to sue California for emission standards and stuff. You're looking at it going, are they really doing this, or is this just to please investors for the short term? And then they're hoping electrification will just like go away and we don't have to do it. You know what I mean? So it's an interesting question to see. But yeah, I think Tesla will be obviously doing, you know, incredibly well. I don't know. Like, when did they say they'll have 1 million cars per year? I think that's still like 2022, maybe Because you need Giga Texas and Giga Berlin, probably. At least Giga Berlin could do another 500,000. Yeah, I think we'd be good around then. So,
yeah.
Yeah. That's...
It's amazing.
Yeah. They're doing it. They're really doing it. Yeah.
How many years ago was it that he was sleeping on a couch in the factory?
2017.
So in 3 years, they went from the verge of collapsing to...
Yeah.
Most valuable automaker in the world.
And one of the most valuable companies in the world.
That was April of 2018.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was looking,
was that production hell? That was production hell.
Yeah, that was production hell.
That's when I did the GoFundMe for him.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
That was so hilarious.
That's crazy. That's
crazy. That wasn't even that long ago. That was not long ago.
No, 2.5 years ago, they were like, make or break, do or die. That's
but this crazy. Is the 87th month of COVID, so, you know, we're still...
Oh, well, should we take a little break, guys?
Show.
Let's do it.
We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, we wanted to take a second to thank all of our fans out there who are supporting this channel and our individual channels. We wouldn't be anything without you, Everyday Astronaut, Teslanomics, Answers with Joe. Thank you.
I mean, yeah, honestly, it's this community of people. It's your comments, your likes, your shares, your subscriptions. I mean, we really wouldn't be doing any of this without you.
And we really love when you guys join the conversation. Why Don't They Just is super fun each week, where you submit your questions for us to try to answer as best we typically can.
We wanted to let
you know how to join the conversation via Patreon.
Yeah, if you are a Patreon member, you can join our exclusive Discord channel. You can also get early access to episodes, a lot of just other little small perks, but most importantly is our tight-knit community on Discord, because there's a lot of like-minded people that you can chat with live in real time, and it's just a lot of fun to see the community come together each week and listen to our recordings as we record it. That's my favorite part.
Yeah, and so anyway, if you want to join, you can go to olfpod.com/Patreon. We would love to see you there. Thanks again.
And now back to our ludicrous programming.
And welcome back. I think we're gonna do a Why Don't They Just Maybe or
Why
something.
Don't They Just Maybe.
Yeah, Joe, you got some hot Why Don't
works,
They Just
works for
me.
I got two Why Don't They Justices.
Oh, Why Don't Ooh. They Justices.
It's about the Supreme Court. Why Don't They Justices? terrible. Okay. So this is from Alan Benton. He says, why don't they just use cameras to track where the drivers are looking to train autopilot? This could be via the built-in camera or maybe even a simulator instead. This could help the software to learn where to look for signage or road markings.
Oh, I didn't see the last part. Okay.
Isn't somebody already doing this?
Yes.
This sounds familiar.
Yep.
Maybe it's the NSA.
Done did it.
I'll start because this is not really my domain. I think I think they could do that, but at the same time, I think the cameras are seeing everything anyway, so I don't know if there's anything to really defer from the human eyes or human glances that would actually help AI understand more about how to drive, other than just learning, like, okay, this sign therefore corresponded to this speed. This sign made the line markings go like this. This sign did this. Like, I don't think humans are a very good driver in the first place. And if you're just staring over at someone's, truck testicles or something, like, I don't think that's going to defer to the AI what was happening or whatever in that situation. So I don't know if that's necessarily the best marker or best thing to be looking at, but I think it could be valuable for some things. I think it's more valuable as far as when we're in this in-between stage, knowing whether or not you're paying attention. Mm. You know?
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I think maybe it was the Cadillac system had eye tracking to make sure you were watching
correct.
The road or something.
Yeah, it's called Super Cruise.
Yeah,
and they have cameras facing. I think the cameras are either in the binnacle dash or they're in the steering wheel, and there's like a green LED light in the steering wheel that kind of indicates... Are you looking or are you not looking? Huh. I think I saw Consumer Reports or Edmunds or somebody test it, and they like put sunglasses on and it still worked, kind of a thing. Yeah, it's an interesting idea for sure. The idea of using a human's eyes to train the algorithms to know where to look. Like that, that's actually a really interesting idea, because there are so many little intuitive things that we look a certain way, or we look at a certain thing, and then that changes our behavior slightly. But kind of to your point, Tim, I think it would probably be like too much noise. You know, you'd see the, you know, something, a person crossing the road that has a funny hat on or something, and you would look at that, and then the algorithm like
would latch onto that.
Tried like, oh, whenever there's a person with a funny hat, do this. Like it doesn't, you know what I mean? It wouldn't.
They turned on the radio or like something like totally irrelevant to the situation. Like,
there's going
to
be a lot of noise there. It's going to be a lot of false positives. A lot of things saying, oh, when you saw that, do this, but that's not what you wanted to do. The harder
like
part,
it calls
of
your
course,
significant other anytime you drive past like a store or something with goodies, you know, like an ice cream shop or something. Like,
yeah,
you're just, it's like it sees that you're like looking at the ice cream thing, and then you're like, oh, honey, do you want ice cream? And like, and pull in, so it just assumes that, oh, ice cream shop, I'll call I'll call the number one contact or whatever.
Yeah. 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 It's a weird, there could be a lot of weird outcomes of that. I mean, the harder bits are, and this is coming from my friends that are in this space, trying to figure out like, is that a paper bag or is that a rock? Mm. Is that like a boulder I'm gonna hit and I have to avoid, or is it a paper bag
that
I just
gotta
run
be
over?
Hard.
Right. Or is that just a little bit of water on the road, or is that a lake I'm about to drive into?
Right.
Because that may look very similar just from a computer vision standpoint.
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe there's something to be learned there, but it sounds to my thought would be that there'd be so much noise that it would be hard. It wouldn't be of much value is my guess.
Well, and it would be tracking some dude like staring at some girl jogging in spandex in the sidewalk, you know, and right. So the car would start looking out for that. I don't know.
Yeah.
No,
I think as humans, we're pretty distracted, and wouldn't that just kind of make the car distracted?
Yeah, I don't want to learn our tendencies. I want to start fresh.
Yeah, be better than us.
Yeah. The car just keeps checking its Instagram the whole time it's driving.
You see the screen just, it takes over with like
the navigation disappears. It's just like scrolling.
it starts cursing out other drivers over the stereo when it gets cut off and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we got another. Why don't they? Mm. Why don't they hust?
Why don't they hust?
Justices.
And this is from Wolfgang! Exclamation point. So Starship will be uncomfortable for long duration space flight. I guess we're talking about going to Mars. Why don't they just install a giant inflatable habitat to open for the majority of the flight? So why not put like a Bigelow expandable thing to just kind of like bubble up and give them extra space?
Let's go Ben Joe me. Ben.
Will it be uncomfortable? I mean, I don't know if you're floating without gravity, how comfortable or uncomfortable can something be in terms of the ship that you're floating in other than maybe the space? Oh, okay. Maybe that's what he's talking about. Like it won't be as comfortable as a bigger space, which I forget. We talked about it before. Like is it true you could get trapped if it's too big, just floating around in the middle? Because you like can't, there's no, like you have to like take your shirt off and like throw it the opposite direction you want to go, or try to like, you know, you could get stuck if it's too big. I don't know.
There's
like
gonna be a term for that.
Yeah, right. That was like a risk if the thing is too large, is that you wouldn't be able to, you could literally just be floating around like for eternity or until someone came and saved you. I don't imagine you'd be there by yourself though. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a hard one. I don't know. I don't imagine it being that uncomfortable. But why don't they just install? Maybe that's because it's more work, more delta V, it's more weight, it's maybe more things that can go wrong. And if you're going to Mars, comfort on the ship is probably very low on the priority list. You know, as opposed to like radiation giving you cancer or something. So, yeah, that's where my head's at. Joe, what do you think?
So, Tim, do you happen to know how wide Skylab was?
7 meters wide, I think.
Okay, and Starship is 9.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm just thinking, like, you've seen the footage of inside of Skylab. Like, there still has not been anything with that kind of volume since, right?
Right.
That astronauts have been in anyway.
Right. Not at least, like, not contiguous, you know, where it's like, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, kind of to Ben's point, I feel like it's hard to fully appreciate how much more space there is when you're in space because of weightlessness. Like, you're not, like, I was thinking about my house, I think, is like 2,300 cubic feet for whatever, or not, I'm sorry, square feet. But square feet and cubic feet
right.
are totally different things. And I mean, like, I sit here in this room, like, if I could be in that corner over there or that corner or just sit right there, like, there's all this space that's not being like used that you totally can use.
Triples almost. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it'll be more comfortable than we think it will be. But in terms of like this particular idea, I mean, I like the idea of inflatable habitats. I was a fan of Bigelow. I'm imagining it would still be something like, even collapsed down, it would be too big to... like stuff inside of the starship. It would have to like be added on in space later on. Like, I'm not sure how that would work, but what do you think, Tim?
I'm pretty much on board with both of you guys. I'll share my screen real quick while I'm talking about this, because this is a weird of astronaut that they intentionally just let float in the very middle of the Kaibo ISS module.
That's so a cool module.
He's trying. So the video is it's titled "Astronaut Gets Stuck in the Kaibo ISS Model." So he's just trying to like reach a surface, and he is just, you know, it's space. So there is a little bit of air resistance that he can work with, you know, very little. So he can kind of swim a little bit, but for the most part, each action has an equal and opposite reaction. So he's flailing around trying to just get back to one of the walls, and. Yeah, he's really having a hard time doing it until here he finally gets close enough. It's pretty fascinating to watch. Definitely check it out.
So you wouldn't be stuck there forever because there is air. And
right.
Some,
a good workout.
But if it were big enough, it could take you hours.
It could be very hard to do. Yeah. So the point being, kind of like you guys were saying, you know, right now the International Space Station is about the same volume as like a 747. And the ISS is kind of a jumbled mess, lots of extra instrumentations and things that are not necessarily creature comfort, right? The Starship has at least that much volume too, pressurized habitable volume, or at least pressurizable volume. So if you stuffed it full of 100 people, yeah, you'd probably be stepping on each other's toes. But I'm guessing a lot of the missions to Mars, at least the first ones that are going to be on a 9 meter wide vehicle, will be a dozen people, maybe, you know, where that would be. Imagine having only 12 people on a 747. That would be nothing. You know, that'd be
Is that
super
how many
spacious.
People like 12 astronauts going to Mars for the very first humans? That seems like a lot, man. I guess you need that many people.
It's supposed to be more than that, right?
I mean, really? We really have no... I don't know. There's really never been anything declared of like, we will have this number of people. Yeah. I would guess you'd want more than 4 or 5 because, you know, you want a population enough. There's diversity of conversation and things, you know. Otherwise, 4 people just sitting in a thing for 2 years would drive you absolutely
insane.
Well,
and there's going to be a lot to do when you get there. So you're going to need a whole bunch of people to... I mean, you're literally colonizing. You're not just landing and
with that
off
many
again.
People, are we worried that they'll leave one behind?
Yes, and the Martian will become true. But yeah, I think kind of to everyone's point, I don't know if it's necessary for the first Starship missions. Won't be as luxurious, you know. They won't be as spacious, but you 1,000 cubic meters of volume is a lot for a lot of people. You know, that's more than what I think, you know, you'd really expect. I just don't think it's necessary to add an inflatable module, but if they did, they could always have something where it's like a hatch, you know, where, because it would need to be able to, if it's to be reusable or, you know, used in space, but also landing and reentering, it would have to be able to inflate out and then come back in through a hatch and be closed up and be covered up for reentry. I mean, you could do something like that. I just don't know how necessary it'd be. I think it's adding more systems and more parts and more potential for failure. When really the simplest solution is actually just to make a bigger Starship as you send more people. Starship is so easy to scale up. Once they have this whole thing figured out, 9 meters is literally just the beginning. You can,
you could always flare out, couldn't you?
You can go as big as you want.
Compartment, yeah.
I mean, the whole thing can be huge. The whole, you know, there's talks of 18 meter wide starships.
Oh my God.
You know, why not? What's your, it's just rings, sheets of rings. You just make them wider and you put more engines under them.
I'm just trying to think of how big 18 meters is.
It's like 50 feet. I mean, it'd be 60 feet wide.
60 feet, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be huge. I mean, but why not? Like, what challenge really is there besides just scaling everything else up with it? That's kind of the beauty of Starship and using stainless steel, is it can just kind of, boop, do whatever we need.
Yeah. Well, while we're on the subject, have we talked about the firings?
We have not talked about serial number 8 yet. I actually had
I was going to jump on over there unless there's something else to add to this.
There's one more little segue I was thinking before we hop on over there, because I think that's a good, quite a bit to talk about there, but I wanted to, imagine you're floating in space on the way to Mars and there's a little hole in your spaceship. What do you do?
Oh, you,
Every time I've tried to segue a clip, it's been overridden.
Well, that's on purpose. I've got asked about this a lot. There's been a small leak on the ISS. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, on the Zvezda module, and it has grown to a concern. It's kind of kept going. It went from, I think it was something like 250 grams or something to over a kilogram a day of leaking air. So nice. It's actually growing, which is not great. But good news is they found it. And it was astronaut, who was this that did this? I can't find his, not Sergei.
Ivashinish?
Anatoly? That was in.
Yeah, I think it was Anatoly. Yep. Anatoly, what he ended up doing in order to find the leak, he literally just took a tea leaf and let it just sit there in the module, something really lightweight, a tea leaf, let it sit there, and the airflow ended up drawing it straight. They have all these fancy things like all these crazy ultrasonic things to try to find the leak, and they couldn't find it. So he just sticks a tea leaf there, sees where it floats.
Just like put it underwater, straight. You know, put it in a tub of water. You can just see where the bubbles come out of.
What is that? I don't know.
You never changed a bike tire?
I have.
You never patched a bike tire? Come on.
I don't know. A tea leaf though. So anyway, they found the leak. It's this little tiny crack and they're in the process of patching it. So yeah, good news. Sorry, that's just a quick thing.
Speaking of tea leaves.
Did they say where, what, I mean... Sorry, but did they know where that patch for the...
It's...
What was the problem?
It was this Zvezda module, some kind of crack just in the hole. I don't really know if it's like on a weld or something. I don't know.
You say that very casually. It's just a crack in the hull out in space.
I've seen it before. When that happens, there's like these big red flashing lights like hull breach. I mean, right. Do they not have... I thought they, you know...
So the movies, it's alarms and red lights, and in real life, it's just a tea leaf.
Yeah, yeah. Hold a tea leaf up and see where it goes. Yeah,
that'll be hilarious. Like, we should have a movie like that. Oh, there's a breach in the hole. Grab the tea leaf. Go. Like,
like in Star Trek, they're all flying across the bridge, and it's like, get the tea leaf.
People get sucked out this hole and stuff. Yeah.
There's just like behind a piece of glass, it's like a tea leaf. It's like break.
It's the emergency. Yeah,
break in an emergency.
One tiny little...
In case of an emergency.
Meanwhile, there's glass shards flying all around you. But...
Yeah. Speaking of, so Joe, help us out here now. I will now accept your services.
I wonder if there was ever a crack in the Starship.
Speaking of Starship, do you guys remember serial number 8?
Eight turns sideways is infinity.
Serial number 8 was did something that has never been done before by firing 3 Raptor engines. Of course, our friends at NASA Space Flight and Mary Boca Chica Gal was out there at 3 a.m. or something the other night when this finally happened. I gave up on trying to stream that late. I just did not think it was going to happen because they just had so much. I was just like, nah. So finally, let's see. There's a pre-burner test, which is where they just kind of spin up the pre-burner. This is actually what made me think they're not going for static fire because they just did a pre-burner test. they were able to refill it and retop it off only about an hour and a half later, or relative. It was a pretty quick turnaround. Maybe it was 2 hours or something. But then around 3 a.m. or something, again, I don't remember the times. Check this out. The first time three Raptor engines have fired simultaneously.
This is the static fire, so it doesn't leave the ground.
It doesn't. Yep, exactly. Just a test. Those are your
I love
effects.
That little shot of cloud.
What was that?
Comes out the side.
It's
they do that every time, and I don't know specifically why, but maybe 10 minutes.
So yeah, those of you listening, right before they launch and commit to launch, there is a small jet of high pressure liquid oxygen, or now gaseous oxygen. But I think it's because they're pressurizing the system, getting ready to fire the engines. You know, that's already kind of bleeding, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, full pressure. They start spinning up, mm-hmm. and you see it like shooting out. There's actually now three of these vents because there's three Raptors. So I think, I don't know for sure if there's the same jet that you're seeing off to the right coming at us and off to the other side, or if there's just a single one of those high pressure vents. But before you know it, kaboomy, all three of them lit successfully.
Okay, can I just say, if they, I'm making a lot of assumptions here. If they need a vent like that for every engine, then when the Super Heavy goes off with like 27 of them, would there just be like this huge like dust, like 27 like jets streaming out the side, and then I want to see that.
You know, I don't know. That's a really good
I mean, that'd be a pretty cool sight. I'm
that would
saying.
Be like, you know, it's going to launch and all of a sudden just goes. That's I don't know. That's a great question. But the all three lit successfully for a full duration. According to Elon, it was successful. He basically said a day later or the next day that everything looked good. And they're continuing on with the 15 kilometer hop. But a friendly reminder here, as it stands, each Raptor engine is about a little more than twice as powerful as a Merlin engine. So this was almost as, not quite, but three Raptors is almost as powerful as firing a Falcon 9.
Wow.
And they're doing that relatively close to the ground here without like water deluge really or anything. I am kind of surprised it doesn't just make a huge mess of everything below it, or a bigger mess than it does, you know? Yeah, pretty cool.
Can I assume that it's tied down in some way or locked down?
Yes.
When they do the static fires?
I'm pretty sure it's bolted.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Or they fill it up so much that it physically couldn't lift it. That's the other option. You could also literally just have so much weight of fuel in there, you know, fill it to the top with fuel, and those three engines, even at full thrust, would not have enough weight to overcome.
So when they actually do the launch, would it not be full of fuel?
No, it will not. Three Raptors would not be enough to lift the Starship.
But I'm assuming when it's launching with the Super Heavy, it would be totally full. They wouldn't launch it half empty, would they?
Yep, because once...
But the Super Heavy does have enough to get it up.
Exactly. Super Heavy has a butt ton of engines. When it's the upper stage portion, and you know when it needs to be in the upper stage doesn't actually need to be greater than a 1-to-1 thrust-to-weight ratio. You can have your upper stage be a really low power stage. It could be like a half, you know, or a quarter or a tenth amount of gravity because it's already up there. It's already lobbed up. You have plenty of time to kind of burn. It's like the Centaur upper stage on the Atlas V has an abysmal thrust to weight ratio. It actually has to fly kind of crooked sometimes to actually try to get itself
crab
enough.
Crab mode, that sounds like, huh?
It's kind of got crab mode. It doesn't matter as much on the upper stage. And of course, an upper stage will have at least six Raptors because they'll be able to fire the vacuum engines for when it's in the upper stage. So they can fully fuel it then. But for ground stuff, they won't be doing the full thing.
Is that all they need to do the 20-kilometer hop or whatever it is?
Yeah, it's now looking like it's more like 15 kilometers or so. I'm going to keep just kind of letting some of this stuff play here from our friends at NASA Space Flight. Hopefully they don't mind this just kind of running in the background here. Because they're getting ready to stack the nose cone while I talk about this, we'll just kind of show you.
Is this live?
This was the stuff yesterday. So on Wednesday, they got the nose cone out and the new Bluezilla, the massive Tankzilla, I guess, the massive new crane out there to do the stacking of the nose cone. Late last night, they fired the nose cone's cold gas thrusters, which was a first to. So they're really, I mean, they're just simply getting ready to launch this thing on a 15-kilometer hop. And it's really exciting. Like, this is, these are some big milestones. This is, I really wanted to share this with you guys. This is our friend Austin Bernard. He has this video here that is just too fun to look. He's just sitting on the side of the road, just looking up, and there's just this, the nose cone just driving by, and it is so big.
That's cool.
It helps give you that perspective of just how big this stuff is.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but all the dots that you see in lines on the outside, is that because it has to be structurally supported on the inside because it's not pressurized, right?
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. Okay. Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's not the heat shield thing?
It's not the transpirational cooling or the heat shield mounts for this section. You can see all these weld marks on the part of the payload bay and the nose cone. That is it needs extra structure to make sure that it can handle, you know, all the pressure and all the weight and all the loads and everything. It's just stringers basically, or little stiffeners, ring stiffeners, and strengtheners, strengtherizers. So that's exciting. That is, it's actually happening. The other thing that Austin caught was this. Check this out. Do you guys notice that something different about this particular nose cone?
Worm logo.
And
oh yeah, worm logo. Is that a flag? There's a flag.
And guys,
there's no flappy flaps.
And it's white. Yeah,
it's white.
Oh, I thought that was just the image.
They have painted a nose cone. Getting ready for some kind of mock-up, or, you know, as now people are speculating, maybe this is what's going to be for the next Starship presentation. Maybe it'll be showing what the lunar lander version of Starship will be. Maybe it'll be an actual crew mock-up with modules and stuff someday. But first step is, I guess, paint it white, because the lunar lander version will just be white. It'll be painted for, I don't exactly know what reasons, but it will be. And now we see it.
To be less reflective.
Cool. Yeah. There is one more question that we had from Discord, and that's, why don't they just do a 100-kilometer hop? It's kind of a why don't they just. The main reason... What was that?
Go ahead, Jeff.
For the Karman line thing? Or what?
That'd be the Karman line, right?
Yeah. Like, I guess, yeah, the reason, first off, is like, what would you gain besides saying that it crossed the Karman line? Which is completely arbitrary, especially at this point in
development. Don't you have to have special permission to do that from the FAA and stuff? Like, you can't just... I mean SpaceX clearly has authorization, but, like, this vehicle, wouldn't it have to be certified in some way in order to do that?
They get clearances for certain altitudes and stuff like that, so they just have to apply for a clearance and have it certified to be able to reach, that target. But really, like, what would you gain from flying higher, really, than 15 kilometers? Because the biggest thing they're going to be testing... Step one of testing this is just doing that belly flop maneuver. So that skydiving part, which has never been tested before, and then the crazy belly flop at the very end of it, where it's going to switch from going, belly flopping to all of a sudden, toes down.
I still can't picture it. I just can't. It sounds insane. Absolutely insane.
It will be. It will be insane. So they're kind of going with, like, what's the minimum we can do that? This is the iterative phase SpaceX is in. What is the least amount of hardware, least amount of engines? What's the least risky thing we can do in order to practice that? And that happens to be, three Raptors, gets you high enough up to be able to really get through some of those different, atmospheric conditions. And get you the data you need for that. If they're to try to get up to, say, 100 kilometers, they might have to risk 5 or 6 Raptors or whatever,
And it seems like that'd be a bigger mission that you'd want to test more things and do it wouldn't just be a, hey, it doesn't work. It'd be a, let's get certified on these other 10 things or something,
And we'll probably see, more supersonic and hypersonic speeds on some of these upcoming missions and upcoming milestones. But for the very first one, just the 15 kilometers seems to be about the bare minimum. And it's going to be utterly bonkers. There's a good chance that, next week when we're talking, I might be heading down to Texas already, I might be in Texas. I don't really know, kind of paying attention to where serial number 8 is at and how long it's going to take to stack and integrate and get ready for this flight. but you better believe it, I'm going to see that belly flop. I'm going to be there for it.
But where does it land? It doesn't land back on land, right?
It will land on land.
Oh, okay. I thought this one was doing out to a drone ship.
Nope, they're going to land it basically right where the Starhopper and Starship prototypes have been landing. And as the recording of this podcast again on Thursday, they are working on stacking it right now, the nose cone, onto the vehicle. So this is happening.
I'm just excited to see. This is the first full mock-up that we've seen since Mark 1, right?
Yes, for over a year now.
And this one's functional.
This one's actually
over
functional.
Over a year ago? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was end of September last year. So this is...
You believe it's been almost 3 years since the Roadster unveiling?
Oh, that's crazy.
It was November 2017.
I don't know why they didn't just build it as is right away, you know? I don't know. Release it
it's
in 2018.
It's just not a priority, which is lame. Yeah. I feel so bad for the people that put down $250,000. Literally handed over a wire transfer of $250,000 and have just been sitting there waiting for nothing. No updates.
I don't.
And if you have that kind of money,
There are some YouTubers out there that have been waiting for these.
Waiting to get their free ones.
So that they can wreck it for the views.
Borat's going to drive. He was supposed to drive his truck. Right.
They had to just use a Model X instead.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, so this is obviously really exciting stuff. This is the one. This will probably be other than DM2, right, which was in May. Was that when that was already? I've lost track of all time. And it doesn't matter. This will be, I think, the other big event of the year for spaceflight, where it's like you have to see this, and whatever happens, whether it be smacking into the ground or nailing that maneuver or whatever, it's gonna be something. And
it's gonna be jaw dropping either way. If it's a failure, you're picking your jaw up off the ground. If they nail it, you're still gonna be like, what the hell did I just see?
Exciting. Do you think you'd lose your mind more if it's a spectacular failure and you see this big? I almost think I would lose my mind more, honestly, if it does that thing at the very last second.
If it doesn't crash and burn.
It's going to have to overcorrect because it's going to do that kick with the Raptors.
We will have never seen anything like that before, ever. Nobody's ever done that before.
It'll make what the Falcon 9, how the Falcon 9 lands, it'll make that look like child's play.
Yeah.
Because Ben, I can see. So, just a friendly reminder: when it's belly flopping, it's again horizontal to the ground. You know, it's perpendicular to the ground, the engines wise. And what it does, in order to do it this time, because they don't have powerful enough gas thrusters to do that kick maneuver, they will light up the three Raptor engines at extreme, at full pitch, so that it
and just
kicks,
push it.
So it pushes it. But when it does that, it's going to make it go translate horizontally an awful lot too.
Yeah.
So they have to over-rotate, cancel out that horizontal velocity, and then straighten out and land.
I've seen this video game. It doesn't end well. I can just tell you.
This is Kerbal Space Program to the max.
Yesterday, I went and played golf with my five-year-old, and his favorite part is driving the golf cart, of course. And I'm at the point now where I'm letting him drive it entirely. He's controlling the steering wheel and the pedals. Not super wise, but his overcorrecting of the steering wheel is the thing that's the craziest. You're literally like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It sounds like that. Like it's going to be like a, slosh bucket back and forth kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I imagine part of the flip maneuver is also, so they got the top flaps and the bottom flaps. They're going to fold back the bottom flap so that it goes faster through the air and swings down a little more. So there's more resistance up top than on the bottom.
Yep. Exactly. So that'll help a lot.
But you're saying that alone is not enough. They're going to have to kick in the thrusters while it's still pretty horizontal.
The main Raptor engines.
Wow.
The actual.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So later on, Elon said once they start using the hot. So currently, serial number 8 has just cold gas thrusters. Basically, the same cold gas thrusters that flip the Falcon 9 around, the booster. They aren't very powerful. They aren't very efficient. They will eventually have way more powerful hot gas thrusters that run on Methalox too. And those should be capable, by the time you fold in those back fins and shoot the gas thrusters, they should be able to do that kick maneuver without touching the engines once they're vertical, light up the engines. So they're starting off with a more advanced, difficult landing than they will be eventually. So if they can nail this and get this cool down, what they do after this will be easy.
It'd be cool if they had a Falcon 9 coming down next to it at the same time.
That would be cool.
Just like
that. Gosh.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the drone shot. They'll just get the shot.
How do you film that? Oh,
I can't wait.
I'm pretty excited. Yeah, it's gonna be cool.
We'll have some cameras there. I'll tell you that. We will have some cameras there.
Now, here's a funny question: Is Boca Chica is where this has happening? Further away. Okay, is Tim's house closer to Joe's house than Joe's house is to this? Like, how far away is this from Joe, and is he gonna go?
I mean, I'm not planning on it, but I'm
maybe you
tempted.
Should.
I got to be honest.
Maybe you should. We'll have a place.
Take Zoe with you.
Dallas, Texas.
Good luck.
I don't think my wife would let me do that.
Directions. I'm just going to look up South Padre Island from you. It's
19
gonna be...
hours.
It's
That's actually a good question, Ben. I don't know.
Like, is Tim's house closer to your house currently? Yeah.
No.
Okay. Okay.
I'm further to you than you are to Boca Chica.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's 8 hours. Yeah. For you. 8:20 basically. Mm. It's not that bad. Nice easy day drive. That's
I don't
we can talk about it more.
Yeah, I guess.
But that's what I'm gonna be working on, you know. What are you guys working on? Well, I guess I'll say what I'm working on since we're talking about Starship. We finished the Soviet script, the rocket engine script, and I sent it out for peer review to like three people that know a lot about this. Kind of in a peer review phase, kind of tweaking some stuff. So I'm putting that on like, because this is history. I can't mess, like, it's so evergreen. Like, I don't want to be wrong. So that takes priority of like accuracy and just being exactly right. So meanwhile, I started writing up, I'm on page 12 now, of how Starship works. Basically showing like what's new compared to the Falcon 9, what's different, what all a whole comprehensive, like every change, every different material, every different, the Raptor engine difference compared to Merlin. Like, it's going to be very comprehensive just because I still get a lot of questions of like, so why didn't they just use a Falcon 9 for this type of stuff, you know? And so it's going to be comprehensive. I think that'll time out well with serial number 8 with the Starship overview, you know, or the update that we get. So hopefully, I'm thinking that will be a smart one to get out before then. But what about you guys?
Or time along with it. I'm curious about the header tank. I've never understood how the header tank works at the top of the nose cone.
I talk about that.
Maybe you can shed some light on that.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you? What are you working on, Joe?
Sorry, just real quick before I talk about that, there was one little sort of news story that I wanted to share.
Ooh.
Sort of news story. It's a story that there's going to be a story.
I like these. That makes meta. Sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a meta story. So NASA released a press release saying that on Monday they're going to have some new science results about the moon. And the reason why this is a kind of a non-story is because I'm saying that there's going to be a story, but we don't know what it is yet. But it was some stuff that they found out with this Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, also known as SOFIA, which is basically a 747 with a giant telescope on top. So it kind of gets up above the weather and stuff and takes measurements of the moon. It just says that this new discovery contributes to NASA's efforts to learn about the moon in support of the deep space exploration. And then it tells a little bit about the Artemis program, which we all kind of know. So we don't really know what this means, but apparently there's something significant that they found on the moon. Maybe it's more water under the surface that we didn't know about. Maybe it's lava tubes that we didn't know about that could be, you know, habitable and stuff.
What the heck are the odds? I don't get how SOFIA, a telescope here, an Earth-based telescope, is teaching us things that, like, the orbiters. Yeah, the orbiters and stuff haven't found.
I don't know.
That's crazy. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's many questions, but that's going to be Monday SOFIA looks at like an airplane. 12 Eastern.
Well, like Joe said, it's a telescope in an airplane.
Oh, got it. Okay. The picture right here is just like a regular looking jumbo jet.
Teleplane. It's an air scope.
Nice.
Aeroscope.
But that's not what your video for the week is going to be.
No.
Unless
so I actually have a video that came out today. Well, it's Thursday, so if you're listening to this, it would be yesterday. But it's about the Bermuda Triangle, which somehow I don't think I've ever actually covered on the channel
that
before.
Seems like
but it's
one that's right up your alley. Like, that seems like a very Answers the Joe topic.
I And I super was into the Bermuda Triangle when I was young. Like, yeah. I gobbled that stuff up. And so, yeah, I really don't know how I haven't covered it before now, but that's out. So anybody is...
I saw that one in my feed, but it seemed to have got lost.
Oh.
No? No? Come on.
Thank you. There you go. No, it's pretty fun. So go check that out if you want. But Monday, I'm really leaning into the spooky this month, obviously, being October. I don't normally do like theme stuff like this usually, but for some reason this year I decided to have some fun with it. So I did the Bermuda Triangle. I did Centralia, the ghost town.
Mm-hmm. But
Monday is probably the spookiest one yet. It's basically the most environmentally friendly ways to be buried.
Oh, cool.
The most environmentally friendly funeral practices. The funeral industry is actually hugely wasteful and produces like a lot of carcinogenic. Formaldehyde is carcinogenic.
Mm.
So, it's like millions of gallons of cancer-causing stuff gets put in the ground every year in us.
Yay.
So it kind of covers that, and it covers like some other just fun and interesting and creative ways that you can, you know, do things with your body after.
I've always just wanted to become a tree. Like, I've always just wanted, like, just stick me in the ground and stick a new tree on top of me, let the tree eat me, and then I basically become a tree.
I talk about that. Yeah.
Sweet. Good.
Yeah.
Because I want to learn about that.
You know, it just made me think. I don't think I've ever actually been to a funeral where they had like a casket. Like, everyone in my family.
Like an open casket?
Or just anyone that's actually been buried. I've never been to a funeral where a person got buried.
Huh. Really?
It's all been cremated.
Cremation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
Well, cremation comes with some of its own issues. Hmm. From the energy that's put into it, but also, like everything that gets burned, we create emissions.
Yeah.
That gets pumped out in the atmosphere.
There you go.
I'm excited.
There you go.
I'll watch that one.
Like,
for sure.
Like if you have a certain type of tooth filling, it creates mercury vapor.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's crazy.
Interesting.
Yay.
Fun stuff.
Yeah. What about you, Ben?
Next week is a Model Y range test. How far can it go? And this video has been delayed because there was the new update that just got released.
Too bad he didn't do it before and after.
No, yeah, but who cares? You just want the after. You want to see how far it can go. And I haven't actually done it yet. We're doing it tomorrow, or doing it on the day this posts. And the question we're still not sure of is where to go, because typically when we do this, we go out to the desert. But I've actually been invited to go see the Hummer in person, so I'm going to go try to see that tomorrow. We'll see if they revoke it.
You got invited after that video?
Yeah. Well, I was invited before. They haven't revoked it. I think I'm just such a small fry that, you know, they've not seen it or cared. I don't know. I actually, again, back to that whole thing. I actually really think it's great that they're doing this. I just think the marketing and finance team, whoever got a hold of it and said, this is how much it should cost, is in the spec. I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, that's, but the thing itself is like, cool. So whatever. But the idea is like, we want to end the range test somewhere near there. So I don't know. We're going to do it tomorrow, but that'll be next week's video, is how far can a Model Y really go? And like all the other ones, the idea is to literally drive it until it shuts off, not until it just says zero. So gonna be cool. A fun one. Wish me luck. That'll be a long day, but that's what's going on there.
Stay safe. I know you did it with the Model 3.
Yeah, I did it with the Model 3 twice. And both times when we hit 0 miles, it got about 12 more miles of actual distance.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so we'll see how that goes. And then, of course, you know, it's how fast you're driving and all those things. But I'm trying to figure out the route now. I kind of want to go through the Angeles Crest Highway, the like twisty mountain roads and all that. But again, that's not really like a fair test because you're like going slow and whatever. Yeah. So we'll figure it out. I'll have some fun.
Maybe do one on the way back, one there and one on the way back, and do two different driving styles. Like, one's interstate and the other one's like back roads that are slower.
Yeah, that'd be a long, it'd be an even longer day. I think.
Perfect.
Because, yeah. Yeah, we'll
do
see.
Do it for the videos. Do it for the clickbait.
Dude, two different range tests in the same day. That'd be like.
I love it.
I don't know if I have enough energy for that, you know? But yeah,
get it.
That's what's going on then.
Energy. Well, is that it, guys?
Okie dokie.
We'll see you guys next time in
Our Ludicrous Future.
Hey guys, thanks so much for watching and for listening. We really do appreciate it. We couldn't do it without you.
Yeah, and if you want more of us, you can consider becoming a Patreon member where you can get early access to episodes, you can listen to us record live, join our awesome Discord community, or get your name in the show credits.
So head over to olfpod.com/Patreon to learn more. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.